She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. This show is sponsored by Goodwill Industries of Southern Arizona, where their business is really about changing lives through training and employment, and indeed they do. We cannot thank them enough for their support. Get ready for what honestly could be a life-changing show for you, and I don't say that lightly because this guest has changed my life, he's changed my husband's life, and dramatically changed what it is we eat. His name is Dr. John McDougall, and he is a physician and nutrition expert who teaches better health through vegetarian cuisine. John McDougall has been studying, writing, and speaking about the effects of nutrition on disease for over 30 years. His philosophy is that degenerative disease can be prevented and treated with a low-fat, whole foods, plant-based vegan diet, especially one based on starches such as potatoes, rice, and corn, which excludes all animal foods and added vegetable oils. And trust me when I say that John has the science behind him. Today, John is going to give you lots to think about with some very impressive, what I call food myth busters. Welcome, John, and thank you for being a guest on our show. I know that you are very much sought after to be interviewed and as a public speaker. So let's get started because I want to bust a lot of myths. Are you ready to do this?
Well, I don't know. I don't know why there should be any myths. I mean, the truth.
Yeah, wish you were right there, bud, but let me start firing away so that we can do to our audience what you did to a lot of us, excuse me, back in Tucson in May when you came to speak to the Healthy You Network. Sorry for this. Excuse me, you have me all choked up here. So what I'm going to do, and I said to you, I've never done a show like this, but I took copious notes. I was a very good student when you did your presentation. So here's myth number one. All humans need protein, and if we're going to eat meat, chicken is better for us. How much protein do humans really need, John? Do we have to eat meat?
You know what? It's been scientifically calculated many years ago. It was actually done in the 40s, and it is very, very low. I would say about, maybe 3-4% of their diet should be protein, which would be, let's see, if you have a 2,000-calorie diet, 3% would be, 60 calories, and that would be divided by 4 grams. I don't know, what's the math there, 15? 50, just so little. In fact, you know, Walter Kempner, he did work in the 1940s and 1950s, where he would take patients, this is Walter Kempner from Duke University, he would take patients, very sick patients from all over the world. In fact, the Kempner-Duke Rice Diet Program was the basis for the financial success of Duke University during the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. A very famous program, Walter Kempner's was, and he took a diet of white rice, fed it to patients, and because white rice had so much protein in it, so much excess protein for some of his patients with kidney disease and heart disease, that he had to add simple sugar, white table sugar, to the diet. And as many as half the calories came from white table sugar, which has no protein. So he would take white rice and cut the protein content of white rice, which is about 5% of the calories, in half, which meant that the calories from protein were, 2.5-3.5% of the calories. He would do that and feed that to patients, and it was tested as to whether or not patients were protein sufficient, and they were. I mean, it's virtually impossible to design a diet that's protein deficient. So when you ask how little, you know, how much protein do we need, the thing that every every consumer, every scientist, every medical doctor, every dietitian should be responding with is, who in the hell cares? I mean, you cannot design a diet that's too little in protein. Now, you can design a diet that is excessive in protein. If you take care of patients with severe kidney disease, for example, like Walter Kempner's at Duke University, even plain food like rice, in his opinion, was excessive in protein. But on the traditional American diet, the kind of foods we eat, which are emphasized as high protein, like your dairy foods and your fish and your chicken and your meat and your eggs, those kinds of foods deliver a protein load to the body that's toxic in many, many ways, toxic to the kidneys, to the liver, to the intestine, to all kinds of organs in the body. They're toxic. And I can show you thousands of articles that show that. Yet, you know, the first question you leave this interview out with is one that will be the question that everybody is asked when they say, they declare to their friends and family, I don't eat meat anymore. I'm a vegetarian. But the first thing they'll say is, where do you get your protein? Well, excuse me, there's no such thing as protein deficiency. You know, it can't be created except with a synthetic diet, as long as there's sufficient calories in the diet. So we really have things totally backwards. And it's not by mistake we have things totally backwards. The reason that we believe that we need to get this excessive amount of protein, and the reason when somebody says the word protein, the response from everybody, scientists, dietitians, you know, your mother-in-law, everybody, is when you say protein, they say meat or maybe eggs. The reason for that is because of the industries that sell those products. It's not a conspiracy, it's just business. It's a marketing tool called unique positioning. Unique positioning. What every company does, no matter what they sell, is they find something out about their product that is particularly unique, noticeable, maybe valuable, and they advertise that to death to their customers. It's just business, unique positioning. So the meat industry and egg industries, poultry industries, fish industries, they noticed that their products were high in protein. So they have convinced almost the entire world that without their products you'd get protein deficient. Yet the scientific research published over 100 years, more than 100 years, shows that there's no such thing as protein deficiency. Do I still have you there?
You have me here because I mean, it's when you start talking. I mean, I'm a very present listener, and it's like, The biology that happens in me is I do say that to people, and I don't have the really good answer when they say, but we need to eat protein. How do you get your protein? So I'm taking copious notes, and I'm still ready for the next question. You have me.
This is all published in the scientific research. There's no dissenting opinion. And plus, I've written about it in my works for probably 30 years. Well, I understand that people are confused, and you know, it is the way it is.
And it's the regular media, the popular media, the commercials, and everything that makes us. I don't think just unique positioning. I think they make us feel fear that if we don't do this,
yeah. But why?
Yeah.
Why would they cause that fear in people? It's because industry is just doing normal marketing business. It's just like if you sell automobiles these days, you advertise to your customers that your automobile gets 62 miles to the gallon. It's fuel efficient. But they don't put in the same ad that we build this car so light and so flimsy that if you get in an accident, you're most likely going to be killed.
Right.
You know, that's not part of the advertisement. Part of the advertisement focuses on something unique, something sellable. And so that's all the industry's done. Like, for example, if I say calcium. Every one of your listeners says milk, cheese, dairy.
Everyone.
But, the same conversation with protein. There has never been a case of dietary calcium deficiency ever reported on any natural diet in all of medical or scientific history. Yet, everybody knows you've got to drink milk to get calcium. It's just advertising. It's false advertising. It's unique positioning. But boy, have they become successful. I'll give you one more before we go on. If I say omega-3 fats, all of your listeners say fish.
Right.
But you must understand, no fish has ever made an omega-3 fat. They're made by plants. So it's just marketing, ladies and gentlemen. It's just sales. But the consequence is that billions of people are being fattened and killed.
I know, it's not funny. Like, I laugh, but it's really, I mean, it's killing us. But, John, I want to circle back for a minute, because when you were talking about sugar and rice, and talk about how your journey started. I mean, you were trained as a traditional Western medical doctor. You were assigned to Hawaii. And what happened? What did you see that started you on this path to pretty much nothing but a plant-based diet?
Well, that's a long, long journey, a long story. I've been at this for 40 years. I've been at this since at least 1973. So that would be, 41 years? Good grief. It's amazing how time goes. I clearly understood all the things that I'm telling you now by 1977. So that's almost 40 years.
Right.
My life-changing experiences were many. My eyes were first opened in 1971 when I was a medical student. There was a man, his name was Dennis Burkett. He was known as the Fiber Man. He was a surgeon trained in Edinburgh, Scotland, and he, after his surgical training back in the 1940s, he went from Edinburgh, Scotland to Uganda, Africa. And he quickly became the head of Ministries of Health, where he served as the head of Ministries of Health of Uganda for 17 years and took care of 10 million people. Well, this man in 1971 came to my medical school in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and he told me about his experiences in a lecture about how in Uganda, Africa, amongst 10 million people, observed for 17 years, 1,000 hospitals, thousands of physicians reporting. He told me that during his experience as head of Ministries of Health, he never saw obesity. He never saw DP and thrombosis, never saw colon cancer, diverticulosis. He never saw appendicitis. He saw one case of gallbladder disease and one heart attack in 17 years. And he told me that was because the people in Uganda, Africa, live on a high-fiber diet. Well, fiber is only in plants. What he was talking about is a diet of various grains and root vegetables, no meat and no dairy, or almost none. And that's what he told me in 1971. Well, that kind of opened my eyes. I went home and told my wife, Mary, that we're switching from white bread to brown bread. But that's about all we did. I just scooped up my egg yolks with brown bread.
It was a beginning step.
It was an eye-opener, and that's what has to happen to everybody. Everybody who has a chance, you know, whether you be a lay person just struggling with your health and trying to keep your kids and your husband alive, or whether you be a medical doctor or a dietitian, somebody's got to open your eyes and let you see it. And that's what I feel that, you know, I've been doing and trying to do, is just open people's eyes. So he opened my eyes, and then what happened is in 1973, I went to become a plantation doctor on the Big Island of Hawaii. And there I learned a lot of things. Between 1973 and 1976, I took care of 5,000 people on a sugar plantation. And during that period of time, I observed that some of my patients were really healthy and some were really sick, and it had to do with generations. My first generation patients, who were older gentlemen and ladies who were raised in the Philippines, Japan, China, and Korea, and had moved to the Big Island of Hawaii to work on the sugar plantation, they never had heart disease or strokes or colon cancer or breast cancer or rheumatoid arthritis. They were always trim and hardworking to the 80s and 90s, and their kids, they started losing that immunity, and the grandkids were just as fat and sick as everybody else. Well, what had happened is these people, my plantation patients, my 5,000 patients on a sugar plantation on the Big Island, Hawaii, my first generation patients had learned a diet of rice and vegetables, no dairy, very little meat, and they maintained that diet when they moved to the Big Island and worked on the sugar plantation. But their kids, they became influenced by Western living, and they ate richer foods. And by the time you got to the grandkids, the third and fourth generation, you were ended up, you know, it was obvious that these people were fat and sick with heart disease, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, rheumatoid arthritis, and so on. And the only thing that had changed was what they ate. They just changed from rice to meat and dairy. And so that was a huge eye-opener. And then, of course, I started getting passionate about scientific research, which I've been reading for nearly 40 years. And that's why I can tell you with confidence there's never been a case of protein or calcium deficiency. And omega-3 fats are only made by plants, so the fish is just an intermediary. The fish never makes omega-3 fat. Because I know this stuff because I've been studying it for 40 years. And anybody who takes the trouble to do the research will come to the same conclusions. You know, the truth is the truth. You just have to open your eyes and look for it.
So let's go back to milk for a minute, because it's a really personal example. My mother lost all her teeth when she was 26. The doctor told her it's because she didn't drink milk. My mother lost all her teeth when she was 26.
Oh, yeah, right, from not drinking milk.
That's what the doctor told her. So can you imagine, as a mother, what regime was for her kids drinking milk for bones?
I lived in the same generation.
So what do you do to have healthy teeth? And what is the substitute for, you know, I'm paranoid about it, and I don't drink milk because
in the world would you think that drinking cow's milk, a food designed to raise a calf, would be essential for your teeth?
Because advertisers told us. I mean, seriously, a myth.
Yeah, but I'm serious. Why would anybody think that? Why? What if I told you that, or your mother was told by the doctor, that the reason she lost her teeth is because she didn't drink dog milk? Or maybe it was because she didn't drink whale milk.
Right.
Or maybe it was because she didn't drink cat milk. Or maybe the milk of any other mammal. Would that be a reasonable statement?
That would be so appalling.
How about the reason your mother lost her teeth at 36 is she didn't continue to drink her mother's own milk. She should have been her mother, your grandmother, should have continued nursing your mother, and then she wouldn't have lost her teeth.
Right.
I mean, how bizarre can you get to believe that drinking cow's milk is necessary to maintain teeth? It is called business. You have an industry called the dairy industry, and they are selling a product called milk. And what they do is they advertise, and they don't mind lying if they can get away with it, and they can. It's just business. Don't take it personal. This is not a conspiracy. So as a result, they sickened you, they sickened your mother, they've sickened and killed billions of people. And you know what? I think I will live long enough to see these people in the food industry go on trial for their behaviors, just like the tobacco industry did. You see, that's what food industry fears right now. They're working day and night to avoid judgment day. Just like tobacco over the last 20 years has seen judgment day. I mean, they've almost sent 7 executives for the tobacco industry to jail 6 years ago for lying about the addictive nature of tobacco. Right now, I mean, I read it this week in the paper, there are lawsuits that are being successfully won for $38 billion against the tobacco industry because they have lied to the public and killed them.
Still.
Food has the same fear right now, and they should. Because all the things I'm telling you have been known by everybody who has had their eyes open forever, and the lies have sickened, fattened, and killed billions of people. And Judgment Day is coming, I believe, or at least I hope so, or at least I hope I live long enough to see it.
I hope
just
you live
like
long enough,
tobacco.
Too. And I'm trying to live long enough because I'm listening to what you're telling us about what we're supposed to eat and what we're not. And it's really been a big change around here at the Mrs. Green and Mr. Green household. So, John, we're going to have to take a quick break, and when we come back, there's so many more myths I want to get to. And I literally wrote down things that you said when we went to the workshop, and we'll talk about things like a glass of wine a day is good for you, fact or fiction. And what about, let's take on starch and carbohydrates. And another one I'd like to go into a little bit that was very, I would say, depressing and kind of daunting to me is the traditional publishers like the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, CNN, how they're standing in line to get all this truth out because you went off on that. And it was rather daunting to me. So everybody, I know you're glad you joined us already. We're interviewing Dr. John McDougall, who has been studying, writing, and speaking about the effects of nutrition on disease for over 40 years. And we are going to talk more about a plant-based vegan diet, especially one with starches like potatoes, rice, and corn, and how we can all get healthy. Please stay here with me. More from Dr. John McDougall. We'll be right back. Think blue. Think beyond green. Think TDI clean diesel technology. One part of the Volkswagen Think Blue initiative, our goal of creating and encouraging eco-conscious products and behaviors. This is Mrs. Green. A car that can drive a long way should still make you want to, well, drive a long way. Volkswagen Jetta's TDI clean diesel is a high-mileage vehicle that lets you stop at the filling station less often so you can spend more time enjoying the road. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI.
Bookman Sports Exchange is now open at 3330 East Speedway. We're taking our passion and experience of buying, selling, and trading books and music and applying it to the world of sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear. We are giving you another way to save money on the things that you love, Bookman style. Remember, Bookman Sports Exchange, sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear, now open daily from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Speedway east of Country Club. Check out bookmans.com for more info.
Ready to clean out that garage? Goodwill offers you 40 convenient locations all over southern Arizona. And at every one, you'll be greeted by a uniformed Goodwill employee trained to assist you in unloading your items, prepared to offer you a receipt for your tax-deductible donation, and grateful for something you won't get anywhere else.
Thank you. Because of your donation, I have a job.
The gift of Goodwill. For a list of Goodwill donation sites, go to goodwillsouthernaz.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And rest assured, you're being given a lot to think about today with our guest, Dr. John McDougall. Please remember that Mrs. Green's World membership program is alive and growing. Consider becoming an official supporter of Mrs. Green's World to help keep our broadcast free and independent so that we can have guests like John McDougall, who truly cares about our greater good and our health. You can become a member by visiting our website at mrsgreensworld.com. Click on the Preserve Our Planet icon in the upper right-hand corner, and we so hope you'll do just that. And another quick reminder is about our great new app for listening to our podcast. Lots of people can't listen at noon on a Saturday. It's called Igloo Radio. And again, visit our homepage. Download it. It's a free mobile app, and you are there. It works for all mobile devices, and we really are continuing to get great feedback from our listeners about how easy it is. So, John McDougall, physician, nutrition expert who teaches better health through vegetarian cuisine, as I said in the opening of the show, John has been studying, writing, and speaking about the effects of nutrition on disease for nearly 40 years. His philosophy is that degenerative disease can be prevented. Think about that, people. Everybody that you know with the degenerative disease can be prevented and treated with a low-fat, whole foods, plant-based vegan diet, especially one based on starches such as potatoes, rice, and corn, and it excludes all animal foods and added vegetable oils. So, John, I know this isn't the perfect segue, but you did say a myth is a glass of wine a day is good for us. Fact or fiction?
You know, that's kind of off topic, like you say.
It is, but I had to ask you because I like red wine. that one's for me.
You know, that's the problem is people like to hear good news about their bad habits. I don't think there's a listener out there that doesn't understand the perils of alcohol. It destroys 1 in 10 lives. I don't think any doctor should ever discuss alcohol in a positive light just because of that. It destroys 1 out of 10 lives. Children are beaten. Wives are abused. Traffic accidents occur, so it has no place in the discussion of health, period. That, I think, is as far as the discussion should go.
You got it. And I just, I don't want to get emotional, but you're absolutely spot on and right about that. So let's just move on.
Yeah, let's move on to things that...
Like starch and carbohydrates.
That people don't know.
Starch and carbohydrates, they're bad for us, and they make us fat, right?
Well, you know, it's unbelievable. Sometimes, often, you know, I'm just amazed at how things can get so wrong. Just like I told you about, there's no such thing as calcium protein or omega-3 fat deficiency. There's no such thing. It just doesn't exist, and the industry has told a story that makes people believe otherwise. It's just like with the idea that starches are fattening. Now, how in the world could that have ever happened? Well, I happen to know, and I don't think it's worth the detail to go into, but it's another industry issue in terms of trying to keep the focus off the problem. You see, if you can divert people's attention to something else, then they won't get excited about your particular product, and in this case, industry, and they have. Industry has focused the public's attention on sugar.
Right.
Which is not health food. I mean, white sugar is not health food. But as I told you, Walter Kempner's diet contained large amounts of sugar just to cut the protein intake and various things. So granted, sugar is not health food, but it's the whole focus of attention these days. And there's a reason for it. It's because if you focus on sugar, you could miss the elephant in the room. And the elephant in the room is the animal foods and the vegetable oils. Anyway, how did starches, the idea that starches got you fat, happen? Well, it was, you know, as I say, a diversion from industry. They had to blame something on why people are fat. And, of course, French fries make you fat.
Right.
But that's because, you know, they're basically oil, not because of the potatoes. And so, you know, I don't know that real experts are confused. I guess some of them really are. There are a lot of confused people out there because they can't see what you and I are discussing. Once you open your eyes, then you can't be confused anymore. But just to focus your listeners for a minute, starches make you fat. And that's why when people eat rice, which is one of the best-known starches, I mean, rice has fueled probably more people than any other food, maybe corn. Rice, let's just say rice has fueled more people on Earth than any other fuel. That's why all the rice eaters you can think of in the world today and throughout history are obese. That's why there have been 2 billion obese Asians on planet Earth, say, 80 years ago. It's all that's changed now. I mean, this is so bizarre. When you think of a rice eater,
it is so bizarre. It makes you laugh out loud. If you ever see a fat Asian, I don't think I have.
Well, you do these days. I mean, I've been traveling all over the country, and, you know, I see fat Chinese kids and fat Vietnamese parents. And oh, yeah, it's all changed, but it's only changed in 30 years since they've given up the rice. But I know your listeners have been around long enough and have made enough impressions to know how ridiculous it is that rice would make people fat since there are no fat rice eaters. And rice, of course, is a common starch, and you can carry that on. Especially those of you who are into history, you can carry that on to various populations of people. You don't have to be distant history. You just have to go back 30 years.
Right.
But say you go distant history, because all this happened in 30 years. All the things that we're talking about, I mean, they happened in this country about 70 years ago. But in the world, they all happened in about 30 years ago in India, China, et cetera. If you go back in distant history, you study populations of people like the Aztecs and the Mayans, which were the people of the corn, or the Incas, which are, you know, the people of potatoes. Or you look at the breadbasket of the world, which is the Middle East. And still, people in the Middle East, you turn on the news tonight, and there'll be stories about Syria and Iraq and Iran and Afghanistan. You look at those people, they're pretty darn thin,
Yeah. Pretty
strong, pretty scary. And part of the reason is that 71% of their diet comes from starch. So, you know, starch has been the traditional food of people, whether it be rice or beans or barley or wheat or potatoes or sweet potatoes, and never, ever, 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 no exception, has anybody ever been fat living on that kind of diet. Not to a single person has anybody been obese living on that kind of diet. It just never has happened. Why? Because it is the food of people. People are starch eaters. Anyway, we've got this whole bit of misinformation out there that misdirects people's intention, and they're confused. Now, I want you to know, I wrote last month, which would be June of 2014, We had a group in Costa Rica. We take people traveling with us a couple times a year, and this is one of our McDougal Adventure trips. And my mind was a little idle there and kind of wandering. I thought, now, how in the world can I talk to people about this message? I've written 12 national best-selling books, you know, hundreds of thousands of words. And I thought, you know, I'm tired of writing words. So what I did is I put together Dr. McDougall's color picture book about food poisoning. And so I put together a 66-page color picture book that probably has less than 1,000 words in it, probably less than 500 words in it, maybe only 250 words in it, because people don't read. But it's got pictures, and I put that together last month, and it's been extremely well received. In fact, we've had it translated into over 15 languages so far.
Dr. John McDougall, I wrote a book last month. It's so you. I just had to interject that. I went to Costa Rica and I wrote a book. How can people get it? It's like when people get to know you, they don't think it's surprising, but not all of my audience knows you yet. Yep, John McDougall went to Costa Rica and wrote a book.
Well, you know, I was asked by my publisher, as I say, I've done 12 national best-selling books. I used to make my living as a book salesman. You know, that's how I supported my family. And I just wrote a book that it did quite well. It's called The Starch Solution. And my my agent, the one that sells books for me to big book companies, came to me a few months ago and said, she would like to sell another book. Why does she want to sell another book? Well, it's her business.
She does quite well with John McDougall books, I'm sure.
Yeah, she does. She does well. And I said, two things. One, this is the figure. And I gave her a dollar amount, which was considerable. And she said, that's no problem. I said, number two, I'm not going to write a word book. I will not ever write another word book ever. I will write a picture book. And anyway, I said, go sell the picture book. But in the meantime, I said, you know what? Even though it was a large amount of money, I'm sure, I'm not going to say the figure, but if I did to your audience, you'd say, well, that's a large amount of money. It doesn't matter. I am not going to sell another book to another book company. You know, book companies are passe. People don't read books, paper books anymore. They read the Internet. And so what we're doing is we've self-published this color picture book, and it will be given away free. And
kidding.
No, it's free, of course. Everything on my website is free. And so they're going to do, we're going to do the color picture book. As I say, it's in 15 languages already. It'll be, in many, many more languages. So you can say you're Spanish and Spanish-speaking, you've got grandma at home or your, relatives, and they don't really have English as their first language, you can say, well, here it is in Spanish, and it's 66 pages, and it tells you why you have food poisoning. You see what's going on. This is not a small issue of eating the wrong food.
No.
What's going on in the United States and China and India and South America and Europe and so on is something that can be called nothing short of food poisoning. People are dying from food poisoning, and the food poisoning comes from animal foods and oils. And unless you start looking at it this way, you really don't have the chance you ought to have to change and fix the problem. If you just think, I got to cut back on the fat and maybe cut down on how much I eat, you're not going to solve it. If you start looking at it as if somebody's putting arsenic in your food or DDT,
right?
And you go,
which isn't
God,
really
I'm,
too
I'm
far.
Suffering from food poisoning.
Right.
Well, they are. They're putting in something more toxic, not as acutely toxic, but chronically toxic. Food poisoning, which is due to eating fish, chicken, lobster, beef, pork, olive oil, etc. Food poisoning has caused more death, more suffering, and does today, than alcohol, heroin, cocaine, tobacco, and any other detrimental habit that you can think of, all put together, in terms of your family, in terms of the country, in terms of the world populations, in terms of planet Earth. I heard you comment about your mission, and it had something to do with saving planet Earth. Excuse me, growing poppy to make heroin is not environmentally unfriendly. Growing grains and potatoes to make alcohol is not environmentally unfriendly.
Right.
Growing tobacco is not environmentally unfriendly. making a pig or a chicken or a cow is destroying the planet. It's half of the greenhouse gases and the major source of environmental pollution in the world. So get it straight, folks. Food poisoning is killing you and planet Earth. If you start thinking in any other terms, you're not going to solve the problem for you or the planet. That's the way it is. You've got to start thinking in terms of these severe terms to get the problem solved. That's what I think.
And look at people. I mean, it's like when I hear you say this, and I've heard you say it, and I've read it, and I have a couple of your books, it's you just have to look around. You're a scientist. You have all the facts. You've got it based on what you have absolutely.
And I'm a medical doctor.
And you're a medical doctor.
Yeah, I see this in front of my eyes, and so does any other doctor who does this.
But for us, all you have to do is look around the mall or read articles about the state of our healthcare system and what's happening with diseases. I mean, it's overwhelming. So what about when people say things like, here's another myth, heart disease, cancer, they can all be traced to genetics. What's the John McDougall take on that?
Genetics? Excuse me.
Excuse me.
All these problems, happened in China since 1980. In 1980, fewer than 1% of the population had type 2 diabetes or were overweight. Now, 30 years later, 12% of the population has diabetes. 50% are pre-diabetic. So did your genes in China change in 30 years? Now, this is a diversion that allows people to not look at the problem or the truth. Is to talk about genetics. Even if it's true, you can't change it. You can't fix it. But if you believe it's food, you can fix it today. Yes, you can. And you will. I mean, it always works. If people are sick from food poisoning, which causes obesity, breast cancer, colon cancer, heart disease, constipation, GERD, multiple sclerosis, etc., if you're suffering from these problems and you stop food poisoning, then that's the day you start getting better. The body starts healing. And it's phenomenal what happens. Reversal of disease is unimaginable in an inexperienced person's eyes. They can't imagine that you could get that well. But if you do, it's kind of like walking out in the street and seeing a hardcore drunk falling all over the street. And you go, I wonder what would happen if I took his vodka away from him.
Right, right.
What would happen?
Yep.
Excuse me, and how often would it happen?
And how long would it take? I mean, it's not like, you can start seeing the changes in how you feel and how your joints ache and your weight and everything. It's immediate relief and satisfaction. Yeah, yeah.
We just got back from Washington, D.C. last week. Mary and I took our three grandsons. We gave a talk. I was a speaker at the International Diabetes Conference in Washington, D.C. Saturday, a couple days ago. And my three grandsons, they're 6, 7, and 10, were at the conference and with us in Washington, D.C. We had a great old time. Went to the museums.
It's one of the best places to visit. Really, it is.
It was fun.
It's fun.
They were forced to attend the 45-minute lecture I gave on food poisoning in front of a conference of 400 people. But even before then, when I put together the Dr. McDougall's color picture book, and I said, when I made them go through the 66 pages and showed them what was going on, they understood. And so as we're walking through Washington, D.C. last week, after they had to attend my Saturday conference, we'd walk through the airport, and I'd look at my oldest grandson in particular, he's 10, and I'd look at him and go, we'd look at somebody, some fat lady or some disabled gentleman walking along, and I'd look at him and I'd go, food poisoning. And he'd laugh because you can see it. You look at your friends and neighbors and relatives and you can see it. This is food poisoning and you can fix it. As soon as you see it, you can fix it. And it always works.
So let me ask you this. I just have to ask you this. Since you were in Washington, D.C. and you were traveling and you were in airplanes, what did you eat? What do you look for to eat? Do you take a lot of food with you?
At the Grand Hyatt Hotel where we were staying, they had a half a dozen vegan options.
Great.
And if we would have had the time and the location, we rode the subways most of the time.
Right.
We didn't get above ground very often. But, even at the Nationals ball game that we went to in Washington, D.C., they had something called Ben's Chili. And Ben's chili, which we had that night, was a vegetarian chili, which Ben's Chili. But, you know, the food is every place. One of our favorite restaurants in Washington, D.C. is right near the Capitol. It's a Mexican restaurant. You just go in there, you order whole beans and corn tortillas and so on.
I know, a black bean taco. I mean, it's becoming, starting to be one of my very best friends. Okay.
As soon as you see it.
You know it. Okay, we've got to take another break.
It's everywhere. Like yesterday we were in San Francisco. I'm trying to get my visa for India. I'm going to India on Saturday.
But okay, hold that thought. We have to take another break. When we come back, we'll talk about going to India. Dr. John McDougall, everybody, stay here with us.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Glimmerglass Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some pretty impressive news about the VW Jetta TDI. It's got a turbocharged clean diesel engine, it's 90% cleaner than previous diesel engines, it gets 609 miles on one tank of gas, more than the Prius. That's from Tucson, Arizona to San Diego and halfway back. And it's got an amazing 6-speed Tiptronic transmission. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI or visit ChapmanTucson.com.
The Habit Store is a big operation with staff and volunteers working hard to reduce our carbon footprint. We sell donated building materials, furniture and appliances, and recycle the metal from items that we can't repair or sell. We even have solar panels on the roof. The good deals we offer shoppers means Tucson Habitat can build and renovate homes for hardworking people. The Habit Store's store hours are Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, Saturdays, 8 to 4, and you'll find us on Grant Road, just east of I-10 in Tucson, Arizona.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And I can do my personal plea. Everybody, think about what Dr. John McDougall, our guest today, is saying. He is extremely knowledgeable, passionate, to a fare-thee-well. He's a physician and a nutrition expert who teaches better health through vegetarian cuisine. He's been studying, writing, and speaking about the effects of nutrition on disease for almost 40 years. And everybody, take a pen, write this down. If you're driving and listening to it on Igloo, get somebody in the car to do it. Visit drmcdougall.com. There is so much free, great, informative, scientific-based content. I'll say it a couple more times, and when we do our social media for this show, we'll be putting it on Facebook and Twitter, drmcdougall.com. John, thank you so much. And when we last spoke, you were talking about getting ready for a trip to India.
Yeah, okay. Hopefully, if all well goes well, if I get my visa. Spent yesterday in San Francisco working on that. Hopefully, I'll be going to India on Saturday, and I don't know. You know, I don't have any real expectations. I'm going to be talking at 5 medical schools, and I don't know. I may be able to talk to some government officials there. Maybe it's going to be an opportunity. The people who invited me are very excited about me going over there. But here is just a classic population we've been talking about. 30 years ago, people of India were relatively trim, low rates of heart disease, diabetes, et cetera. I mean, it was there. It wasn't that it wasn't there.
Right.
It was among the rich people. But here, now we're in a situation where, well, I know this because the principal investigator on my diet MS study is from India. She's from Oregon Health and Science University up in Portland. And we talk all the time. In fact, she's one of the reasons I'm going to India. She says, you know, there are heart centers like every few blocks in India now. Type 2 diabetes is a huge business in India.
Jeez.
Obesity is rampant. But see, here's a population of people, hopefully, who knows what's going to happen. Maybe we can do a radio show after my trip to India, and hopefully there are people there who can say, you know what, I remember my mom and dad, and they lived on rice and lentils, dal, and vegetables, and no meat, no meat, and just a little bit of ghee, or maybe no ghee, or maybe a little yogurt or no yogurt, or probably a little yogurt. They have a little dairy over there. And, you know, nobody in our village, our town, our city was fat. And they think, you know, I've been around, anybody that's over, say, 40 years old, I've been around to see this change in India over the last 30 years. And if I think about it for a minute, I know what's why. You know, I know why people in 2 billion people in India are sick. So maybe they're a right population to listen. I've been trying to speak to doctors, government officials, and, you know, scientists in the U.S. for 40 years now. And I've got some reception. Sure I have. But it's not what I'd hoped for or expected. So maybe it's time to go to India or China. Our program is actually being used in China now. So maybe there are other parts of the world that will more clearly be able to see the problem and see how important it is to have a nation of people who are not sick, who are not contributing the bulk of their income to the medical businesses. You know, in the United States, and I'm going to tell the people in India when I go there, in the United States, the only growing sector of our economy is the medical business sector. You know, that's it.
That's disgusting. It's beyond disgusting.
Hospitals. Yeah, that's the only segment of the U.S. economy that's growing. And we're in huge, I'm not an expert on this, but I'm sure all your listeners are, we're in huge economic problems in the United States. Just feeding into hospitals and cancer centers and heart centers and obesity and pharmaceutical companies with dietary diseases, these are caused by food poisoning, can't be helping the United States become a stronger nation. I just cannot believe that. Anyway,
but John, I want to ask you though. Let me ask you this. So you say 30 years ago, people in India were trim, they were healthy, and on and on. 30 years ago, did they start following the Western medical diet? What happened?
Well, what happened? A lot of things that happened in the world in 30 years. You know, if you've been around for post World War II,
right?
You know, the world changed with telecommunications, CNN news, tapping into huge fossil fuel reserves. Communication has been a really big thing. And it wasn't any individual thing that happened. In India 30 years ago, there were a few rich people. In the United States 30 years ago, there were fewer rich people, but there are still a lot of rich people. The United States has been a very wealthy nation since World War II. 30 years ago in China, there were a few rich people. But now, because, you know, China is such a productive country, they have done so well in terms of energy and automobile productions and computers and so on. I mean, when we were in Washington, D.C., or just when I was in San Francisco yesterday, a good share of the tourists are from Asia. Excuse me, they didn't get here on a free ticket.
Right.
These people are extremely wealthy now,
yep.
And with that wealth came a change in diet, which you can see massively over the last 30 years. That's why I mentioned that 30-year time period, is huge changes in planet Earth. The economies of countries that were once considered underdeveloped, like China and India, huge and easily recognizable changes have occurred. Like I say, if you're over 40 years old, you can see this, that have occurred in the world, which has changed the status of people in a country from a few rich people to everybody can afford to eat at McDonald's and Burger King and Pizza Hut, and they do.
And they do. And you talk about, you know, some of the things you say, and I don't know if you covered it in the workshop that I was at in May, but what about, you say, every disease? What about the big one that, like, every third person, and that's a gross exaggeration, to me, the mystery disease of fibromyalgia. Do you take
this? Fibromyalgia is a pussycat. We take care of lots of people who believe they have fibromyalgia, whatever, however you want to define it. All kinds of inflammatory arthritis conditions as well. In fact, 2 months ago, I think it was 2 months ago in my newsletter, I published a series of 10 patients with severe inflammatory arthritis, and fibromyalgia kind of fits into this category. And all 10 of them were cured. And, you know, it happens pretty much. Most people with these inflammatory, autoimmune, whatever kind of conditions you want to call them, it's due to food poisoning. And, you know, you can find out within 4 to 7 days. That's how quick people start to get better. So we take care of lots of people with fibromyalgia, aches, pains, arthritis, you know, all these non-specific inflammatory diseases that are due to injury from eating animal foods and oils. It's a very easy thing to treat. You will find that to be true in 4 to 7 days.
Honestly, I mean, I have a friend whose daughter is suffering for it, and of course, I'm going to get off the phone, off the interview, and call her and let her know that.
Then what you have to do is convince her that it's worth a trial.
Right.
And then you will go to Dr. McDougall's color picture book on food poisoning, and they will go through that in about 7.5 minutes and go, oh, it's obvious why people are dying from food poisoning, and I know how to fix it. And if they take it serious and they do it, you know, it's just like in 24 hours, the constipation stops.
The right.
Oily skin starts to clear up, and the indigestion goes away, and the blood pressure starts to drop. And, you know, within 7 days, we get almost everybody off blood pressure pills and everybody off diabetic pills and so on. This is not a matter of taking months or believing. You know, it's like a hardcore drunk.
Right.
You take the vodka away, and guess what? They're sober the next day.
Right.
It's just like a cigarette smoker coughing up 2 packs of cigarettes a day. You take the cigarettes away, and in 2 days, they're not coughing anymore. Hey, you stop the food poisoning, and you'll see the results immediately.
And it's just...
You know, you don't have to believe, ladies and gentlemen. Just do it, and it costs you nothing. And cut your food bill by 40%. Oh, it's just too stupid simple. The problem is, you know, we have the truth and success on our side. The problem is they got all the money.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad you say that. That's our favorite line around here. If it's not about the money, it's about the money.
Yeah. It's kind of like the fossil fuel industries. You know, we have, you know, not we, but, you know, your listeners and everybody in the world has the truth on their side, and they know how to succeed by changing the problem. But the oil and the coal and the gas industries, they got the money.
They have the money.
They have the money,
and therefore
so you
the
know
power.
What?
Yep.
It's a tough job to stop them, but we can. We can and we will, just like the food industry, and we stop the tobacco industry, and alcohol is kind of under control. We will stop big food, too. There will be blood and guts on the pathway, but we will stop them.
And it's another thing where I have to speak to your point about we actually could do it quickly. It's part of the reason that I think I'm alive on this planet is to wake people up about their food coma. I mean, it's been a very jarring path for me because I started it at 57, and it's like, you've got to be kidding me. We are being poisoned. I truly believe that.
Yeah, it's food poisoning. And people have to think about it. You may think the way what I talk is dramatic and I sound hysterical, et cetera. I don't care what you think.
It's not.
I'm not in for a popularity contest. But ladies and gentlemen, until you start treating this as food poisoning, more serious than heroin addiction, alcoholism, tobacco addiction, and I'll give you the numbers. You just look at the economic numbers in terms of destruction. You look at personal destruction in your family. You look at environmental destruction. Excuse me. Any way you weigh it, food poisoning is hundreds of times greater than anything you can add up on the other side. So anyway, until you start looking at it that way, you don't have a chance because you think it's just a little problem. It's like a cigarette smoker who says, oh, I just got a bad habit. Excuse me, you're a hardcore addict. And until you look at it that way, you're not going to fix it. Same thing with you with food poisoning. If you think, well, I just got to cut down. Hey, you're sick, and you will stay sick until you take this serious and you realize you suffer from food poisoning and you can fix it overnight. That's what I think.
And it's a perfect, you know, another myth you said, okay, everything in moderation. It's such a soothing thought. Just if you just have less, if you just have a little bit, everything's going to be fine. Right.
Never works. That's the problem. You see, no cigarette smoker that I know of ever, I've been at this business for 40 years, I've never seen a cigarette smoker quit by cutting down or an alcoholic quit by switching to beer and wine. You know, you can't do it. Same thing with food. You are not going to fix your obesity, your rheumatoid arthritis, your constipation, your coronary artery disease, your greasy skin, your pimples, your fibromyalgia, etc., until you face the facts. And the fact is you're suffering from food poisoning, and you must stop it. Now, when I say you must stop food poisoning, I'm talking about animal foods and oils, and you think, well, I have nothing to eat. I will starve to death. But you do if you understand the rest of the story, and that is you're a starch eater. So you can have oatmeal for breakfast, which I just had before this interview.
Right.
You can have hash brown potatoes. You can have pancakes and waffles. You can have beans and rice for breakfast. You can have all kinds of vegetable soups for lunch. You can have bread for lunch. You can have for dinner. You can have bean burritos, pasta marinara sauce, mushu vegetables and rice. I mean, you can have Well, Mary, my wife, my partner for 43 years, has published over 3,000 recipes. And most of them, by the way, are free on the Internet. Our website is free. No gimmicks. Free. Everything you need to know. Recipes, rules, educations, articles on protein that we talked about, articles on Walter Kempner I just talked about, articles on the cheaters, liars, and polluters who are on the other side of the argument I talk about. It's all free on the website. Just go to drmcdougall.com. You will not write me and say, oh, this is a sales pitch. This is a gimmick, because it's not.
To buy anything, it's so not. Everybody listening, it's so not.
I'm not taking a Costa Rica free.
Right. I'm really sad about that. I think you need an on-site reporter for that trip. You know, this is it's kind of killing me, because I have, of course, another page and a half of questions and MythBusters, but there's two that I would really like to get to in the short time that we have, because I think it made me really mad when you talked about it, because we are being told that olive oil is the healthy alternative to use. Yep. It's the best. Just use that. Switch from all that other bad stuff and use olive oil.
Well, that's why you're not getting well. Well, olive oil is not a food. I mean, it's an extract from the fruit olive, just like corn oil is an extract from the food corn. I mean, these are not food. These are an isolated, concentrated nutrient. In this case, it is a fat, an oil, liquid fat. And it is it's poison. I mean, the fat you eat is the fat you wear. These things promote cancer. They promote heart disease. They're just toxic. And, you know, people try and make judgments like, what's the best oil? Is the best oil flaxseed oil or olive oil or corn oil, et cetera? It's like you and I sitting down, let's see, what is best? Chesterfields, Marlboros, Camels. What is best? Is it scotch, whiskey, vodka? What is best?
Right.
You know, this is the kind of argument that goes on. These are poisons. And people they sit down to a salad or maybe a pasta dish, and then they dump 2 ounces of olive oil on it. And guess where that 2 ounces of olive oil goes? The fat you eat is the fat you wear.
I'm going to write that on Twitter.
In your butt, in your thigh, in your abdomen, and on your skin. That's why you have greasy skin. Because the oil, you know, this is the thing that amazes me. People say, okay, I'm going to eat 2 ounces of oil, and it's just going to disappear. I'm going to put it in my lips, and it just vanishes. Maybe it comes out of my ears. Maybe it just goes with like a radiation out of my... Where do you think that oil goes? What do you think happens to that oil? I mean, good grief, stop and think about it for a minute.
I don't want to talk about that anymore.
Your body has to deal with that oil. And, you know, this is particularly important for converted people, for vegetarians, for environmentalists, for animal rights people, is that a lot of those folks out there are what I call fat vegans. They are trying to make the world a better place, but there's this huge, huge, huge obstacle standing in their way, and that's their personal appearance. And you can fix that, and I'm here to help you fix that, because you have to save the world. You must save the animals. You must do the right thing. But if you are eating oil and fake soy foods and earth-balanced butter or all that other garbage, and you end up fat and greasy and sickly-looking, and you tell somebody to save the planet by changing their diet, they're going to laugh at you.
Yeah, it does compromise your credibility.
It is a problem. So you got to get the oil out of the diet. You got to get the vegan foods out of the diet. You have to replace them with potatoes, rice, corn, beans, peas, and lentils, some fruits and vegetables, and that's how you fix it. And then you'll look great, and everybody will listen to you when you say, hey, you know, we're destroying the planet by eating the animals. Hey, you know, this cute little cow with the blinky eyes, you shouldn't be eating that animal. Somebody will look at you and say, well, boy, that's neat, but if I looked like you, I'd do anything.
That's true.
You look wonderful. That's the way you want to fix the world.
It's all the Healthy You Network people. Amber, you know Amber, and it's just like, oh my God, she's a lean, mean, passionate machine, and that's what she does. She eats it. We have 1 minute left, so we're not going to get to the other one that I wanted, which is coconut milk. So here's what I want to ask you on air. Can we have Kelly be in touch with you after you come back from India, and we'll schedule another show so I can get a lot more?
I think what I'd like to convey to your listeners is that this information and more is all on my website for free. Just go to the website, sign up for the newsletter, browse through the website. All the information is there, and join the battle.
DrMcDougall.com. drmcdougall.com.
Yeah,
we'll be putting the word out. John,
we have to do it together.
We do. And thanks for showing up in my life. Make it a great green week, everybody. Talk to you next week. John, thank you and be safe.
Pleasure, bye.